Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy Josh Gonzalez. I am the greatest, hottest star in pro wrestling today. Here with me is Christian Michaels. We are wrestling's most wanted, and we're here to present
Approaching the Ring, a pro wrestling podcast. I love how this is supposed to be my podcast and you just turned this off.
I mean, hey, you know, I mean, I'm always the person that has to freaking put the umph and shit. I mean, that's how our group has always been. Don't do that.
Yeah, Gabriel Iglesias, yeah, I'm going to get you with it.
They don't know I'm Hispanic. Shut up.
Now they do.
All right, but here we're going to be talking about...
Let's just focus on the one first thing first. Today is an All Elite Wrestling episode. It is not WWE, not New Japan. We are just focusing on All Elite Wrestling right now. Because while, yes, it is the definitive number two when it comes to pro wrestling, it's got problems.
And I mean, with every company does have its problems. And we're going to be dissecting things a little bit today with AEW and their upcoming shows and events.
Especially since they announced that they will be doing Wembley Stadium All In this year.
Now, how do you feel about All In being at Wembley rather than at the States?
Well, personally speaking, I feel like one of the conversations that has been had about AEW since the beginning has been, what's its WrestleMania per se? And the biggest debates have always been either between All In and, or All Out and Double or Nothing. And this kind of definitively straight up shut that whole conversation down with saying, oh yeah, it's All In. Because like, the excuse before this point could have been made for either or. Double or Nothing is the first official AEW show. However, All In was basically the birthplace of AEW to begin with.
Now, I personally like Double or Nothing better. I think the past couple years they have had better match cards. They have had better storylines. Even with the pandemic, I think their Double or Nothing was way better than anything that I had saw that year per se. Especially in WWE and in New Japan, anything. I think AEW really put the gas on the whole pandemic era. And so with them announcing All In at Wembley Stadium, I'm definitely curious to see what they're going to do with that show, given that it's going to be the first big main attraction outside the States in the existence of AEW.
Outside of North America per se, because they have been to Canada.
Yeah.
They've been to Canada a couple times now, but I hear what you say, but at the same time, I feel like All Out was more definitive than that, because in all honesty, they had the crowning of their first world champion there. They also had a lot of the storylines start off and end at All Out. So literally, All Out for AEW is basically their starting point. Which, in all honesty, and if they want to keep doing stadium shows for All Out in the future, I don't know if they want to move All Out up to early August, late July. Because if they want to do stadium shows, they're going to have to beat around the NFL with their stadiums if they want to do one here in the States. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think with how they're doing their shows right now is, I think it's smart, especially with this being the, like, definitive early years for AEW. I think they're not pushing themselves to do huge main stadium shows because they're trying to get a good feel of where they're at.
Yeah, but I feel like and this is one of those main things, if you were going to do that, I don't think you want to start off in a country that has not had any AEW content whatsoever outside of on TV. if you really want to gauge where you're at that point, I say you should try, like, literally Tony Khan is the son of the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're pretty much stationed in Jacksonville. They go to Daly's place all the time, which is right next to the stadium. Like, and if you honestly, and I feel like a stadium stampede match would be so much more fun if the fans were in the stadium.
So you feel like, how would that look though? Like a stadium stamp, like the fans would be in the stadium attendant seats, giant football field.
Yeah, basically make it a false count anywhere match where you go in any form, any way around the stadium.
I feel like you would have to have a lot of superstars in that match.
Yeah, but it's basically like this is one of those things that it was the pandemic era, but I feel like one of the things that I miss about AEW is the stadium stampede match. Because in all honesty, it just, they don't do those anymore because it's no longer the pandemic era. But those matches were fun. Like, prime example, WWE in the pandemic era was a chore to watch. In the pandemic era, WWE was a chore to watch.
I honestly forget half the stuff that happened in that pandemic era. I think the saving grace was when they brought in Dominic to face Seth. But then again, Seth can make anybody a star in WWE.
Yeah, but it was still a chore to watch either way. Them setting Bray on fire, the zombies from the Army of the Dead.
No, besides the supernatural stuff and the cliche gimmicks that we see in TV and movies and wrestling, I mean, what is one match that you can say that you saw that was good in WWE during the pandemic era?
Not a lot. But I can say that about AEW. Like, the first Blood and Guts match was actually pretty fucking fun.
Oh, yeah. The first Blood and Guts match when Jericho got fucking launched off that freaking cell.
Right, right. But then you also have, like, again, all the Stadium Stampede matches that they did. Or just stuff like that. Sammy Guevara getting hit with the golf cart.
Freaking MJF forming the Pinnacle.
Pretty much, like, and then you also got Matt Hardy going through the pool at TIA Bank Stadium.
Brody Lee winning the TNT Championship against Cuddy.
Right, and then just like, but like I said, Matt Hardy becoming broken Matt Hardy, then going to that pool and basically making that the Lake of Reincarnation, and coming out as different forms of Matt Hardy every time.
Which she also pulled off in that first Stadium Stampede match.
Right, that was hilarious. You can remember
they had the Matatu just pop up out of nowhere. Version 2.0 Matt Hardy just
like this. It is just, honestly, AEW needs to fix, but that's not why we're here. Why we're here is because AEW has announced that they're going to Wembley Stadium. And one of those things that they need to fix is how to get to this point and not have fans worry and also sell out that stadium. Because in all honesty, they shouldn't just focus on selling out just because it's AEW for the first time in the UK. That should not be the only selling point. And we had this conversation earlier, and you brought up a fantastic point. The main event for this show should be Kenny versus Will Ospreay for the IWGP United States Championship. Have that rematch at this show.
Well, yeah, because it's like Will Ospreay is one of the hottest attractions in the world right now. He is the biggest wrestler to come from the UK in decades. He's currently signed with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He has working relationships with AEW. I mean, you gotta pull the trigger on this match. The fact that you have a lot of European representation in AEW and you're taking this event to Wembley for the first time ever in AEW history, that is a show that you want to showcase these talents. You want to showcase the European and English talents that you have.
Right, because in all honesty, where has Anthony Ogogo been?
I mean, honestly, it's, I think they pulled the trigger on a go-go too soon. I feel like it was a flop. It wasn't Cody's fault. It wasn't a go-go's fault for that match. It's just they should have built it, and they should not have built it around what they built it on.
No, but it's just like the whole deal is that like Cody went back to this whole old foreign heel gimmick, which should have died out a long time ago. Like the foreign heel as a gimmick in terms of wrestling is something that should have died out in the 80s and 90s, especially since there were, and I'm using air quotes here when I say this, supposed death threats against Sergeant Slaughter during WrestleMania 7's buildup.
And can I also mention the fact that if they're going to do a foreign heel gimmick, why have it be against an Englishman? Against an American? That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, dude, like, it's an all honesty. Like I said, it's an old way of thinking. It's a very old way of thinking.
Old way of thinking. They brought our ass back to the 1700s. Jesus fucking Christ.
Like, Revolutionary dude, hey, man. Hey, you ain't got to explain nothing to me. In all honesty, I just saw, like, all that kind of stuff, and I'm just like, bro, Anthony Ogogo could be something special, but y'all doing the wrong things with him right now, dog. Y'all doing the wrong things. He shouldn't have been, like, I would not have had him pair up with QT Marshall in the factory yet, I mean, first off.
Are they still doing stuff at the factory?
No, the factory's basically disbanded at this point, because QT Marshall's now with Will Hobbs. I don't know what Aaron Solo's doing. I don't know what Nick Camarado's doing.
But I thought I saw the factory still doing stuff. I mean, it's like one of the promos, the whole QTV thing, wasn't Aaron Solo in that whole promo?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't care. Like, that's the whole problem. Like, I don't care about the factory.
Now, you know how I feel about factions in AEW. I feel like there's too many, and now it's gotten to the point where I'm right. Too many factions, and you don't do anything with them. It just dies out, and it's just clumpy.
But I mean, like, the only factions that truly matter at this point are the Elite, House of Black, Best Friends.
Okay.
Like, those are the only three that honestly matter.
House of Black, yes, I undoubtedly agree. The Elite, it's always a flop with them because it's like, they'll put on some good matches, then something will happen, either injury or they'll take a break, and then they'll just magically come back like nothing ever happened. JAS.
That one is a prime example of one that got just too bloated.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it just too bloated to me. Because what's the point of adding Anna Jay and Ty Mello?
Dark Order is a novelty act. The only faction that I can see just them continuing to build on is, now that they're officially heel, Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, I feel like, did they really need to turn heel?
I mean, it keeps them fresh. I mean, it gives them something to do. I don't know what you're going to have Brian do after he lost his match against MJF.
Yeah, speaking of which, like everybody else had already turned heel while Brian was still a face, and
Brian was separated from the Blackpool Combat Club. During his whole feud with MJF, he was not affiliated with them. He did not associate himself with them. He was doing his own thing, and they were doing their own thing. It seemed like Brian just left willingly, and now he's back in the Blackpool Combat Club.
Wow.
What?
Wow, I really wasn't expecting that. Okay, so actually, breaking news at the time of this recording, Brian Cage has re-signed with AEW.
That doesn't surprise me.
It actually does, because in all honesty, his wife, more than anybody else's wife, has been very vocal about how she feels like he is being treated in AEW, and I kind of agree with her, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, okay, look, he is a big guy. Right now, there are only three other major big guys in AEW, Samoa Joe, Will Hobbs, and Wardlow. That's it. There aren't that many other big guys that are getting the mainstream attention that Tony is willing to give them. I mean, sure, yeah, they got Lance Archer, but...
Lance Archer, to me, is just a free agent. I feel like Lance Archer can go anywhere and he'll be fine. He has a good relationship with AEW. He has a good relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's gotten to a point where, I mean, he can go to any company and be fine. Brian Cage, though, I don't know. It's just... I used to like Brian Cage, but now Brian Cage just seems like...
He's just kind of there.
Yeah. And it's... And even when they give Brian Cage an opportunity to do something, he's not impressing me any... There's nothing new with Brian Cage. And I'm not going to say that it's his fault. I'm not going to say that it's AEW's fault. But when it comes down to it, you have to mainly hold accountability to the stars.
Right. So, honestly, let's use that as a transition to talk about things that they need to do before we get to All In.
Well, one, they're already planting the seeds with the MJF and Pinnacles and...
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but let's pause right here, and we're going to come back right after these messages.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Josh Gonzalez. I am the greatest, hottest star in pro wrestling today. Here with me is Christian Michaels. We are wrestling's most wanted, and we're here to present
Approaching the Ring, a pro wrestling podcast. I love how this is supposed to be my podcast and you just turned this off.
I mean, hey, you know, I mean, I'm always the person that has to freaking put the umph and shit. I mean, that's how our group has always been. Don't do that.
Yeah, Gabriel Iglesias. Yeah, I'm going to get you with it.
They don't know I'm Hispanic. Shut up.
Now they do.
All right, but here we're going to be talking about...
Well, let's just focus on the one first thing first. Today is an All Elite Wrestling episode. It is not WWE, not New Japan. We are just focusing on All Elite Wrestling right now. Because while, yes, it is the definitive number two when it comes to pro wrestling, it's got problems.
And I mean, with every company does have its problems. And we're going to be dissecting things a little bit today with AEW and their upcoming shows and events.
Especially since they announced that they will be doing Wembley Stadium All In this year.
Now, how do you feel about All In being at Wembley rather than at the States?
Well, personally speaking, I feel like personally speaking, one of the conversations that has been had about AEW since the beginning has been, what's its WrestleMania per se? And the biggest debates have always been either between All In and, or All Out and Double or Nothing. And this kind of definitively straight up shut that whole conversation down with saying, oh yeah, it's All In. Because like, the excuse before this point could have been made for either or. Double or Nothing is the first official AEW show. However, All In was basically the birthplace of AEW to begin with.
Now, I personally like Double or Nothing better. I think the past couple years they have had better match cards. They have had better storylines. Even with the pandemic, I think their Double or Nothing was way better than anything that I had saw that year per se, especially in WWE and in New Japan. Anything, I think AEW really put the gas on the whole pandemic era. And so with them announcing All In at Wembley Stadium, I'm definitely curious to see what they're going to do with that show, given that it's going to be the first big main attraction outside the States in the existence of AEW.
Well, outside of North America per se, because they have been to Canada. They've been in Canada a couple times now, but I hear what you say, but at the same time, I feel like All Out was more definitive than that, because in all honesty, they had the crowning of their first world champion there. They also had a lot of the storylines start off and end at All Out. So literally, All Out for AEW is basically their starting point. Which, in all honesty, and if they want to keep doing stadium shows for All Out in the future, I don't know if they want to move All Out up to early August, late July. Because if they want to do stadium shows, they're going to have to beat around the NFL with their stadiums if they want to do one here in the States. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think with how they're doing their shows right now is, I think it's smart, especially with this being the, like, definitive early years for AEW. I think they're not pushing themselves to do huge main stadium shows, because they're trying to get a good feel of where they're at.
Yeah, but I feel like and this is one of those main things, if you were going to do that, I don't think you want to start off in a country that has not had any AEW content whatsoever outside of on TV. If you really want to gauge where you're at that point, I say you should try. Like, literally, Tony Khan is the son of the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're pretty much stationed in Jacksonville. They go to Daly's place all the time, which is right next to the stadium. Like, and if you honestly, and I feel like a stadium stampede match would be so much more fun if the fans were in the stadium.
So you feel like, how would that look, though? Like a stadium stand, like the fans would be in the stadium attendance seats, giant football field.
Yeah, basically make it a false count anywhere match where you go in any form, any way around the stadium.
I feel like you would have to have a lot of superstars in that match.
Yeah, but it's basically like this is one of those things that it was the pandemic era, but I feel like one of the things that I miss about AEW is the stadium stampede match. Because in all honesty, it just, they don't do those anymore because it's no longer the pandemic era. But those matches were fun. Like, prime example, WWE in the pandemic era was a chore to watch. In the pandemic era, WWE was a chore to watch.
I honestly forget half the stuff that happened in that pandemic era. I think the saving grace was when they brought in Dominic to face Seth. But then again, Seth can make anybody a star in WWE.
Yeah, but it was still a chore to watch either way. Them setting Bray on fire, the zombies from the Army of the Dead.
No, besides the supernatural stuff and the cliche gimmicks that we see in TV and movies and wrestling, I mean, what is one match that you can say that you saw that was good in WWE during the pandemic era?
Not a lot. But I can say that about AEW. Like, the first Blood and Guts match was actually pretty fucking fun.
Oh, yeah. The first Blood and Guts match when Jericho got fucking launched off that freaking cell.
Right, right. But then you also have, like, again, all the Stadium Stampede matches that they did. Or just stuff like that. Sammy Guevara getting hit with the golf cart.
Freaking MJF forming the Pinnacle.
Pretty much, like, and then you also got Matt Hardy going through the pool at TIA Bank Stadium.
Brody Lee winning the TNT Championship against Cuddy.
Right, and then just like, but like I said, Matt Hardy becoming broken Matt Hardy, then going to that pool and basically making that the Lake of Reincarnation, and coming out as different forms of Matt Hardy every time.
Which she also pulled off in that first Stadium Stampede match.
Right, that was hilarious. You can remember
they had the Matatu just pop up out of nowhere. Version 2.0 Matt Hardy just
like this. It is just, honestly, AEW needs to fix, but that's not why we're here. why we're here is because AEW has announced that they're going to Wembley Stadium. And one of those things that they need to fix is how to get to this point and not have fans worry and also sell out that stadium. Because in all honesty, they shouldn't just focus on selling out just because it's AEW for the first time in the UK. That should not be the only selling point. And we had this conversation earlier and you brought up a fantastic point. The main event for this show should be Kenny versus Will Ospreay for the IWGP United States Championship. Have that rematch at this show.
Well, yeah, because it's like Will Ospreay is one of the hottest attractions in the world right now. He is the biggest wrestler to come from the UK in decades. He's currently signed with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He has working relationships with AEW. I mean, you gotta pull the trigger on this match. The fact that you have a lot of European representation in AEW and you're taking this event to Wembley for the first time ever in AEW history, that is a show that you want to showcase these talents. You want to showcase the European and English talents that you have.
Right. Because in all honesty, where has Anthony Ogogo been?
I mean, honestly, I think they pulled the trigger on Ogogo too soon. I feel like it was a flop. It wasn't Cody's fault. It wasn't Ogogo's fault for that match. It's just they should have built it. And they should not have built it around what they built it on.
No, but it's just like the whole deal is that like Cody went back to this whole old foreign heel gimmick, which should have died out a long time ago. Like the foreign heel as a gimmick in terms of wrestling is something that should have died out in the 80s and 90s, especially since there were, and I'm using air quotes here when I say this, supposed death threats against Sergeant Slaughter during WrestleMania 7's buildup.
And can I also mention the fact that if they're going to do a foreign heel gimmick, why have it be against an Englishman? Against an American? That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, dude, like, it's an old honesty. Like I said, it's an old way of thinking. It's a very old way of thinking.
Old way of thinking. They brought our ass back to the 1700s. Jesus fucking Christ.
Like, Revolutionary dude, Amen. Hey, you ain't got to explain nothing to me. In all honesty, I just saw like all that kind of stuff and I'm just like, bro, Anthony Ogogo could be something special, but y'all doing the wrong things with him right now, dog. Y'all doing the wrong things. He shouldn't have been like, I would not have had him pair up with QT Marshall in the factory yet.
I mean,
first off,
are they still doing stuff at the factory?
No, the factory is basically disbanded at this point because QT Marshall's now with Will Hobbs. I don't know what Aaron Solo's doing. Well, I don't know what Nick Camarado's doing.
But I thought I saw the factory still doing stuff. I mean, it's like one of the promos, the whole QTV thing. Wasn't Aaron Solo in that whole promo?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't care. Like, that's the whole problem. Like, I don't care about the factory.
You know how I feel about factions in AEW. I feel like there's too many, and now it's gotten to the point where I'm right. Too many factions, and you don't do anything with them, it just dies out, and it's just clumpy.
But I mean, like, the only factions that truly matter at this point are the Elite, House of Black, Best Friends.
Okay.
Like, those are the only three that honestly matter.
House of Black, yes, I undoubtedly agree. The Elite, it's always a flop with them because it's like, they'll put on some good matches, then something will happen, either injury or they'll take a break, and then they'll just magically come back like nothing ever happened. JAS.
That one is a prime example of one that got just too bloated.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it just too bloated to me. Because what's the point of adding Anna Jay and Ty Mello?
Dark Order is a novelty act. The only faction that I can see just them continuing to build on is, now that they're officially heel, Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, I feel like, did they really need to turn heel?
I mean, it keeps them fresh. I mean, it gives them something to do. I don't know what you're going to have Brian do after he lost his match against MJF.
Yeah, speaking of which, like everybody else had already turned heel while Brian was still a face, and I was just, we were all wondering about that.
Brian was separated from the Blackpool Combat Club. During his whole feud with MJF, he was not affiliated with them. He did not associate himself with them. He was doing his own thing, and they were doing their own thing. It seemed like Brian just left willingly, and now he's back in the Blackpool Combat Club.
Wow.
What?
Wow, I really wasn't expecting that. Okay, so actually, breaking news at the time of this recording, Brian Cage has re-signed with AEW.
That doesn't surprise me.
It actually does, because in all honesty, his wife, more than anybody else's wife, has been very vocal about how she feels like he is being treated in AEW, and I kind of agree with her. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, okay, look, he is a big guy. There right now, there are only three other major big guys in AEW: Samoa Joe, Will Hobbs, and Wardlow. That's it. There aren't that many other big guys that are getting the mainstream attention that Tony is willing to give them. I mean, sure, yeah, they got Lance Archer, but
Lance Archer to me is just a free agent. I feel like Lance Archer can go anywhere and he'll be fine. He has a good relationship with AEW. He has a good relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's gotten to a point where, I mean, he can go to any company and be fine. Brian Cage, though, I don't know. It's just, I used to like Brian Cage, but now Brian Cage just seems like
he's just kind of there.
Yeah. And even when they give Brian Cage an opportunity to do something, he's not impressing me any. There's nothing new with Brian Cage. And I'm not going to say that it's his fault. I'm not going to say that it's AEW's fault. But when it comes down to it, you have to mainly hold accountability to the stars.
Right. So honestly, let's use that as a transition to talk about things that they need to do before we get to All In.
Well, one, they're already planting the seeds with the MJF and Pinnacles and
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But let's pause right here, and we're going to come back right after these messages. And okay, now we're back after that commercial. So before we went to commercial break, we were going to talk about what AEW needed to fix before All In.
Factions.
Honestly, yeah, y'all need to trim the fat when it comes to the factions. Like, it's getting out of hand. I forgot that the JAS, the Jericho Appreciation Society, existed.
There's too many people in factions to where you don't even know what they're doing, what they're a part of, what their goals are. I mean, for God's sakes, is the Firm still a thing?
Yeah, it is, and now Matt Hardy's a part of that one now, so, like,
no, that's the thing, though. Matt Hardy just turned on Ethan Page. It's just like, why even put him in there?
Is Jeff about to come back? If he is, just have him wrestle regular matches. Don't put him in extreme stuff, because that's kind of a trigger for that man.
Jeff needs to stay away from wrestling for a while, like, he's an attraction, but he does not need to wrestle.
No, dude. The problem is not the fact that he's wrestling. The problem is the fact that they've been putting him in extreme rules matches more than anything.
No, the problem is Jeff can't stay clean. Jeff needs to stay away for a while.
Like, so it's a trigger for him. The extreme rules matches are a trigger for him.
That's why he needs to take a break. Just take a long break. He's never done that. Any chance he has to be able to get back into the business, he jumps in, and look what happens. No, he needs to stay away for a while. I mean, at his age, I hate to say it, he might just need to stay away for good. I love Jeff Hardy. We all say it. We never want to talk bad about the people that we love in this business, but I mean, Jeff Hardy stay home. Just stay home. I don't want to wake up and I read an article saying that Jeff Hardy's dead because of all the triggers and the trauma and the drug overdoses and alcohol. I don't want to. No, Jeff needs to just stay clean and sober, be there with his kids. Jeff, stay home. But, I mean, we can also say that about a bunch of other people, too. I mean, my main concern is with their roster, it's...
Well, the first things first, it's they got too many people.
Yeah.
They honestly got too many people. They need to start cutting some people soon, like, in all honesty. And if you're going to have this many people, don't just have... It's time for Rampage to not be... Dynamite Part 2, it is time for Rampage to be its own thing.
They need to make decisions to where the people, because let's face it, Tony Khan says AEW and Ring of Honor are two totally different companies.
But no, it doesn't feel like it.
He owns both of them. He's having wrestlers flip-flop from show to show.
You need to chill out with that. Like, that's what I mean. He says they're two different shows, but it doesn't feel like it because, yeah, Ring of Honor is its own little show. Okay, so why are the Ring of Honor tag team champs defending on AEW TV? Like, you got Ring of Honor, but you still have crossover because Claudio Castagnoli is the Ring of Honor world champion, but he's also still a part of the Blackpool Combat Club.
I think he should have waited a couple more.
No, like, it's not the time. Honestly, I don't think it's the time. And the problem is the fact that, like, there's not a definitive wall between Ring of Honor and AEW. Like, it's basically a plat, that plat, like, it's basically a dry erase board. And you know that dry erase board that used to move around? And people just keep walking back and forth between AEW and Ring of Honor.
The problem is that they do the same thing that they do with Dark and Elevation and all that. They film it right after freaking AEW Dynamite.
Oh, no. Dark and Elevation and Dark. Heck, Dark, they filmed down in Florida in the old TNA lot.
But what about Elevation?
Elevation is filmed before Dynamite. I've been to two shows, so I should know.
Okay, fair enough.
Like... But even then, it's only one match, or one or two matches at a time, and then another match is filmed at a different show. Then they just all, either later that night, if they're not doing Rampage that night.
Don't you just feel like that's just a little bit weird, though, as far as, like, editing? Like, when you put it on YouTube, because fans are going to notice if you're watching a wrestling show, and then the next match is just a whole different freaking crowd. Because Elevation and Dark, they have a shit ton of matches.
Right. And in all honesty, like, it's just like it gets kind of out of hand. But that's all. We can do everything wrong with AEW as a whole in a different episode. We were mainly talking about what they need to do gearing up for All In, their first stadium show. And we touched on the main event. Well, one of the main events should be Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega, and we completely agreed on that. However, I do have a list that I actually want to go down because this is one of those things that I've honestly thought about multiple times over ever since this announcement. First things first, Jade needs to drop the TBS championship.
Yeah, well, everybody knows Jade needs to drop it, but the question is who? I mean, she's ransacked everybody.
And that's the problem.
People want to say that Chris Statlander, but...
No, that's who they wanted it to be. Like, they were building Chris Statlander back up. They wanted it to be Chris Statlander, but then she got hurt again.
Honestly, I thought they should have just waited, let Sky Blue build up momentum, because Sky Blue is one of them prospect prodigies that they could have really elevated. And personally speaking, she got freaking squashed.
Personally speaking, I think it should have been Ty Mello.
No.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, I think it should have been Ty Mello. Because in all honesty, Ty Mello is probably, if not the most improved female wrestler in the business today. She has great character work now. She is good in-ring work. Because in all honesty, so far to me,
yeah,
she
has Ty not... Yeah, Ty Mello is in the JAS, unless they're going to have...
No. But I'm just talking about before this point. Like, she's faced off against Ty Mello twice, and Ty Mello lost both times. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it should have been Ty Mello earlier. Because in all honesty, this title has been around for over a year. Jade has had it for over a year. And when the younger title in the AEW, formerly All Atlantic, now International Championship, has better prestige for it than the TBS Championship, that kind of incites a problem. Because it's hard to build prestige of a title with just one person and holding it for a very long time. Like, no matter who she beats for it. Because in all honesty, the way they're building her up, built her up, there's nobody on the current roster that can beat her. And that's why Taya Valkyrie coming in kind of, yeah, if she don't win, then I honestly don't see a point in this one. And I say they should just go ahead and scrap the title if they were just going to put it on Jade to build Jade up. Because that's what it feels like right now. This title was specifically made just for Jade to build her up. But I feel like she should have dropped it a long time ago and been in the main AEW Women's Championship event around that area.
What's going on with Thunder Rosa right now? Is she just not wrestling for AEW? Is she still injured? Like,
oh, basically, so the rumors going on, like, right now is that it was basically Shawn Michaels shit.
All right, elaborate so everybody can understand.
Okay, so if you're not a wrestling fan and you're just listening to this kind of podcast just because you like fledgling podcast or whatever, go ahead, fine. But Shawn Michaels, back in the 1990s, decided that he did not want to drop the title to Bret Hart. Because the whole plan was, back in WWE, WrestleMania 12, they would have the 60-minute Iron Man match, and Bret would put Shawn over.
Yeah.
Then the next year was supposed to be a rematch between Bret and Shawn again, but this time Bret goes over on Shawn. However, Shawn didn't want to do that. He hated Bret Hart with a passion back then. And so he decided to play politics with it and decided, hey, I'm injured. Even though there was no conclusive proof that he was injured, basically just saying, I lost my smile or something like that, just so he would get out of putting Bret over at WrestleMania 13. Granted, if he did actually go through with the match, we probably would have gotten a completely different WrestleMania 13 and not had the birth of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, the true birth of Stone Cold Steve Austin, let's be honest here. But again, that's just one thing. And the rumors right now with Thunder Rosa is that she is, in all honesty, just pissed at Tony Khan because, in all honesty, she has Britt Baker in his ear all the time.
I mean, I can understand that. I mean, Thunder Rosa is one of the hardest working women in pro wrestling, not just for AEW, but for the independents in general.
Right. And then, like, because in all honesty, even some of her students, I'm wondering, like, why AEW didn't try to sign them. And, like, just, like, that's the whole thing, the whole problem. They still got Thunder Rosa signed, sure, but they are distancing themselves from anybody associated with her. Because the fact that Kylan King is in Impact and not in AEW is a shocker to me. Like, that, like, they, like, I honestly thought Kylan King could have been one of those future stars they could have built their women's division around. But the fact that they decided to just go with, just to keep her, not even sign her, or Kalani Kai, who's starting to build herself up on the indies because of her one over appearance on AEW. Like, they're starting to build themselves up because of their appearances on AEW. Kylan King's in Impact. Impact, and this is the whole deal, which is another major problem that AEW has always had, their women's division, and why I need them to finally move Jade Cargill from the TBS division to, or the lack thereof of a TBS division, to the main World Women's Championship division.
Sorry, okay. So to go back to the whole Jade Cargill thing, if she was to defend the TBS championship at All In, and Thunder Rosa was to come in, how would you build that match? I'm going to let you say it first, how you would build it off first, and then I'll go.
Well, personally speaking, I thought Jade, I thought Britt should have been feuding with Jade for this title at this point. Like, have Britt be the first real challenge that Thunder, or not Thunder Rosa, but Jade Cargo have. Because in all honesty, she has basically beaten everybody to this point. She's beaten two former World Women's Champions in Nyla Rose and Riho, the first two World Women's Champions. And then I can't even remember if she's faced off against Hikaru Shida or not. But even if she hasn't,
Jade has.
Okay, so then she's beaten Hikaru Shida, the third one. Then you got Britt Baker, then you got Thunder Rosa, and now we're at Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter. Four more women's championships.
The only person that is on the current roster that Jade has not beaten in a successful title defense is, obviously, she's feuding with Taya right now.
Right.
She has not faced Britt Baker. And she has not beaten Thunder Rosa in a title match for the TBS championship.
Right, because Thunder Rosa was already women's champion by the time this title was made and by the time the tournament started.
So here's what I would do. Obviously, Jade's going to beat Taya.
Sadly.
What I would do is you have a wonderful setup of where right now Britt Baker is face because Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter are feuding with the Outcasts, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So Britt Baker is already a face. Jade's at that point where the next person she calls out, she's gonna make a promo saying that there is no challenge, nobody can beat me, no one's even worthy enough. We've heard the promo over and over again the past couple months. There is no one left. That's when Britt Baker comes out. So you set up this big match, right? They'll have the match before Forbidden Door because I honestly think that Forbidden Door, they're probably gonna have some kind of big crossover match with the Joshi wrestlers.
No, it's not gonna be the Joshi wrestlers, it's gonna be Mercedes Moné.
Yeah, but I see her working with the Outcast to face a lot of the Joshi wrestlers and AEW women. But what I'm saying is Jade's going to have a feud with Britt Baker. It's going to be a big main event match. And then right after that, she's probably going to have an after-match promo, which I don't think we really hear her do at all.
No, she don't. She beats her opponent and then just walks out.
But imagine if they were to do that promo, and then Thunder comes out. Because Jade will then probably boast about how I beat the one woman that everybody has a hard time beating. I've proven myself. And then boom, Thunder comes out and says, well, guess what? I beat her too. Now you got two unstoppable forces having to go after each other. Do I think that Thunder needs to go immediately for the title? No, I think what Thunder needs to do is she acknowledges that Jade is the champ, but she doesn't go after Jade. She's always in the back of Jade's mind. And I think that will get inside Jade's head psychologically to where it can be Jade has to challenge Thunder. Because everybody's challenging Jade Cargill. Jade has never once just went up to somebody and said, I want to face you.
Yeah. But like, again, that's cool. But I want her to, like, cause I want a fresh start for the TBS championship by the time All In comes around. Like, I get what you're saying, and that could be a good lead in for All In. But personally speaking, I just want her to drop the title before that point. Cause in all honesty, like, it's like with Roman. Like,
Let's compare the two, because Roman is completely different than Jade.
You're fair. The problem with Roman is, even though he claims to be the final boss, he still needs help to beat B-Folk. He hasn't won a clean match in 2 years.
Well, then again, I mean, look at Roman, though. I mean, he's a heel.
No, but that's the whole problem, though. You're supposed to be the final boss heel. Brock was a final boss heel. He didn't need anybody to help him win. Brock was just Brock, and he would win despite that.
I think it's the character, though, because the thing is, Roman has a whole unit that's behind him. When you have that whole unit, you can basically do anything, and it's justifiable. That's just his character.
No, it's not justifiable. I don't see it that way. Because here's my thing. The Miz had the Miztourage. And he's a chicken shit heel. That has been the Miz whole thing as a heel. He always skates away by just a hair of his chin.
But if you're
building him as the final boss, he should be able to beat everybody by himself. He just wants the bloodline here. He just wants the family there to breathe in the same success that he is. Like, that's the whole point of the... That was supposed to be the whole point of the bloodline. I'm successful, so y'all got to be successful too. But because the way they're built it, he's successful only because they keep jumping in. Like, if it was... Like I said, if he beat Guy, if this was a dominant reign where he beat everybody clean, I would not have the same problem. But because he has to have the Usos and then later on Solo come in to help him win, that's my whole problem. Because, like, he literally has to have people come in and help him. Otherwise, he would have lost the title against Drew. He would have lost the title against Cody. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If the Usos and Solo were not a part of the equation, those matches happened the way that they did, without the interference, we would have been gotten new champs by this point.
But see, here's how I see the whole Roman situation, the whole Roman storyline, because that is long-term storytelling. And you and me, we have both seen it from the beginning. So the way I see it is, I see it in a totally different format. And I can see the highlights of it. And the story that I'm seeing from the whole Bloodline story is this. Roman had to put Jay in his place. He had to put Jimmy in his place. He always said, I have to be champion because I'm feeding your family. I'm feeding your family. Y'all need me because I have this. And then it ended up becoming, I've held this championship for so long. I have both these titles. Now you get what's yours. We're keeping these any means necessary. And when he almost lost to Drew, he's like, all right, Solo, you're a part of the family. Now you gotta prove your worth. Handle this for me. The story's interesting now because for the first time, even though Roman's still on top, even though Roman still has the titles, the Usos just lost both tag team titles, which means Cody was right about one thing. The minute one person falls, the rest are gonna follow. So now we have a whole new year of problems that the Bloodline has to deal with until the next big main event. That's storytelling.
But anyway, like, okay, we'll continue this on another episode. But like, we got caught off track. So like,
let's compare.
No. Like
that to Jade now.
Right, like. Jade has been dominant the entire time and has gotten kind of boring. She's had a couple times where she had her faction come in, but it's not to the extent that Roman has. However, the difference is Roman has an established title. He has the Universal and WWE. She is the first and still to this day the only TBS champion. Like, you can't build a title's prestige with just one person, no matter how long they have it. And that's pretty much the problem I'm having. You know, personally, we've had this conversation before. Personally speaking, I didn't think Jay should have won the tournament in the first place. But she won it. Can't change the past. But now we've gotten to a point, it's just like she's beating everybody. And literally, we had a All Out 2022.
I'm still trying to remember what the headline match was.
No. But it's just like where me and Ant.
Oh my goodness. You're talking about that conversation where you guys were like just going off and I was trying to.
Yeah.
We both had two different mindsets that night.
Right. But it's just like, because like they, like again.
Did we see that one at the movie theater or did we watch
it?
No.
We watched it at the house.
Okay.
Or we watched it at the apartment. Okay. But it's just like, that's the whole deal. Like, they built somebody for Thunder Road. They built somebody for Britt to get beat by. They built somebody for Kenny to get beat by. And they were building Chris to beat Jade finally, but then she got injured. And that's another thing, personally speaking, Chris Statlander, as much as people don't like to pull out of Vince McMahon, if she was in WWE, she would have been labeled injury prone and not done anything with.
Yeah.
Like, personally speaking, because the fact that she's torn her ACL like twice or three times. Yes, yeah, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then, side note, though, if you have never seen a AEW pay-per-view in the movie theaters, I highly recommend it.
Oh, yeah, wholeheartedly. Because, like, it's a fun experience because, in all honesty, it's just like going to an actual wrestling show, except you actually got popcorn. But, yeah. But, so going on to the next point that I wanted to bring up, continued push for the guns.
I don't see the appeal in the guns.
Here's the thing. If what happened on Monday didn't happen, the FTR most likely would have signed with WWE. And they would have been gone. And I saw another podcast point this out. That would have been automatic nuclear heat on the guns. Automatic nuclear heat. And like, that would have been perfect for the guns because they finally put it together. They put their whole package together. Have you seen their entrance from Wednesday?
I still see them coming into their own. I still think they need to polish some stuff.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that they're perfect, but to get them to where they need to be, you gotta keep them on TV first.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I can agree that, but it's just like they can be so much more if they just weren't with the firm and they were just doing their own thing and they were just it. I don't want to see them keep feuding with the Acclaimed and, you know.
Oh, no, I wholeheartedly agree. As soon as they beat the Acclaimed for the titles, they should have moved on. But the Acclaim are persistent bastards.
No, and I mean, I love the Acclaim, but right now, if they were to, I think the guns need to run roughshod on all the face tag teams.
Oh, AEW. Dude, at this point, yeah, that's my idea too. Like where just a face tag team comes out, like they just need to come out before the match even starts and just beat the. Yeah,
because I think the problem is with like story time, storylines, and long-term storytelling. There is no long-term rivalries anymore. It's like it's either a one and done, or it's like you go from one match right into another, two, three at the most, and then you never see these matches again. The guns versus the Acclaim, I will say they can have long-term storytelling, but I want them to be separated for a while before we get the Acclaim versus the guns again. I will say that much.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. Then okay, so like you talked about that, and one of my major points is bring back the stories. Yeah. Like, in all honesty, the storytelling ever since Cody left and joined WWE again, the storytelling has taken a huge nose dive in AEW.
That's the thing with, like, modern day pro wrestling in general. There's not that many great storytelling nowadays. The best stories are stories that you can tell for years, and you just don't see that anymore. That's why I'm so invested in the Bloodline WWE. That is long-term storytelling.
Honestly, that's the best storyline in wrestling today. Let's be honest here.
If we're going to complain about Roman, we have to at least say that is some of the best storytelling we have seen in wrestling in a while. Mm.
So anyway, yeah, you made a valid point with the Bloodline, because in all honesty, that's the best story going on. The second best story was Rey and Dom.
Yeah.
That was the second best story in wrestling.
Which, honestly, a lot of people did not think was going to happen at WrestleMania. I had a very strong feeling that it was going to happen at this WrestleMania. I mean, this was a chance for Rey to bring out the best in Dom so far, and I feel like we got that. I don't think Dom needed to go over in this match, because from what it seems like, they are going to do a long-term storytelling. And the end results, I can honestly see, is Dom taking the mantle of Rey Mysterio.
Right, yeah. Notice how we're talking about, when it comes to the best stories, it's all WWE.
Yeah.
It's not AEW, and AEW hasn't had a good story since Hangman Page won the title.
I feel like if they're going to do a long-term storytelling for AEW, the four pillars right now is what you want to do. We have been talking about this for a while. I think MJF is going to beat every single member of the four pillars. He is going to beat Jungle Boy. He's going to beat Darby. He's going to beat Guevara. And that is going to lead up to a fatal four-way match.
Yeah, because I was honestly about to ask how you think they should handle that. Well, because easy. In all honesty, and you just gave me an answer. Because, like, that's actually what I was thinking about. Because I don't know if you want to start off with a fatal four-way and then go to the individual matches, or go the opposite way.
There's going to be multiple matches where MJF is facing one or two more of the pillars, but it's all going to end in a fatal four-way. And while MJF is facing the pillars one-on-one, the other two are going to be feuding with each other. If he doesn't get a one-on-one match with Guevara, because right now Guevara's a heel, Guevara is going to be the one feuding with Jungle Boy and Darby throughout these matches.
Yeah, but the thing is, and this is important, Darby, out of all of them, is the only one who, like, I feel like should truly be in that position, because I feel like Darby is the number two babyface in the company right now.
I feel like Darby's a chaser. He's a chaser. I feel like he's the guy who chases the title, and it's fun to watch him go after the title, but I don't think Darby needs the world title, at least not right now. Same thing with Jungle Boy. If anybody, to me, was going to take that mantle, I would want it to be Guevara, because Guevara has already been in a lot of high-profile storylines and a lot of high-profile matches compared to Jungle Boy and Darby.
Let's be honest here. Jungle Boy right now has, like, he's only been in a tag team. Ever since he came into AEW, everybody called him one of the four pillars, and when his single matches happened, but it's only been him and Luchasaurus as a tag team, and then they split that off. Like, do we know what Luchasaurus is doing, or is he injured?
Right now, he's just kayfabe injured.
Okay, kayfabe injured. But either way, like, it's just like Luchasaurus is gone. Christian is finally gone. And, like, Jungle Boy, this is honestly Jungle Boy's first time going after a singles title. Like, just put that into perspective.
Which, honestly, I think Jungle Boy is going to be the first one to get beaten by MJF.
I honestly think it's going to be Darby. Because, like I said, the thing was, one of the matches I remember, I can't remember which pay-per-view it was, but it was Darby versus MJF. and MJF only won because of Wardlow. That is, he only won because of Wardlow. That's it. If Darby didn't get hit with the ring, the AEW ring, then we wouldn't have this conversation. Like, Darby would have won that match. And honestly, I still look back on it and say, yeah, Darby should have won that match. Because here's my thing. MJF could have taken the loss. Darby couldn't take the loss. Because we all knew back then, like, MJF was going to be the world champ. That's going to be the first title he wins. We all said that back then. Because, I remember I told you straight up, by Full Gear 2022, MJF was going to be world champ. Because we had just finished watching Hangman Page win the title. And I told you, MJF gonna win it next year. Now, it wasn't off of Hangman Page, but he won it the next year.
Here's how I'm going to set up the storyline of the four pillars for this long-term storytelling classic. Whether MJF faces Jungle Boy or Darby last, I mean, whether he faces Darby or Jungle Boy first, he's got to face them first before he faces Sammy, because I feel it's going to be better long term if this fatal four way is three faces against one human. And because Sammy, I feel like he needs to get away from Jericho. He needs to get away from JAS. That's going to be the story that I want to pitch. I think we're already starting to see cracks in the JAS. And
yeah, because, like, isn't basically Anna Jay a face right now?
That I'm not sure about.
No, because she's feuding with Julia Hart.
Yeah, but I think the reason because of that is because there was that triple threat trios tag match that Julia Hart was also involved in. So that could be the story.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, it's not like AEW does heel versus heel a lot.
Well,
but
I mean honestly, at this point, I think of the House of Black as like anti, because they can really face anybody.
I mean, you're not wrong, but at the same time, I don't mean I gotta like it.
But back to Sammy. Sammy's gonna be the one to feud with them while the other one is feuding with MJF. I think he'll beat both Darby and Jungle Boy, and when he gets his shot, he's gonna look Jericho in the eyes and say, I'm gonna do this on my own. When he can't succeed, Jericho drops his ass.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, it's just like, you gotta remember, his wife is involved too.
Yeah, but what is Ty Mello doing right now?
Honestly, nothing.
And honestly, if you want
it's,
Ty...
It's honestly nothing, because she's injured right now.
Yeah, and I mean, Ty Mello is going to go where Sammy goes, and if you kick Sammy out of the group right now, I mean, Ty's going to come back as a face.
Right. I get, yeah.
Plus, if Ty comes back as a face, she can have another crack of Jade.
If they don't put the title on Taya.
Yep. Which I hardly doubt that they're going to put the title on Taya Valkyrie.
Yeah, but at the same time, like,
if they were to, I think Ty versus Taya Valkyrie could be a good match.
Yeah, I feel you. So, what do you guys think? Let us know in the comments below. Just comment, or however you feel like it. This has been Approaching the Ring. I'm Kristen Michaels.
And I'm the ghost, Josh Gonzalez. We are wrestling's most wanted. We are out. Choo!